America behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. My name is Scott Benjamin.
And my, that was a little bit.
I know.
That was like a little bit William Shatner.
It was
there.
Like I was sneaking up on you.
Yeah. You guys probably know me. My name is Ben Bolin. Scott and I do a little show called Car Stuff. And we would like to today talk about something that I think is just amazing. Now, I know you're a Porsche 917 fan, as am I. Mm-hmm. But I am almost as much of a fan of this vehicle.
Are you really?
Yes.
You know what's interesting about this vehicle is you can often see these on the road.
Yes, and these things...
Not the original.
Not the original.
Well, not often, and you wouldn't know it if you did.
And if you did and you do know, then please send us an email.
Yeah, that's right, because that's pretty rare.
That is more than pretty rare, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this car, the Shelby Cobra... 427.
Yes, specifically the 427.
Yes, specifically. Talk about a muscle car, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's the muscle car.
I think so. I mean, you know, there's a version of it that we'll talk about later that's even beyond what most people are thinking about right now.
Yes.
But, you know, this car, should we go right through like the beginning of it, like maybe the early development of it, skip right up to the 427? Cause that's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's, go ahead and kick us off, if you would, Mr. B, mm-hmm. with a little story about a guy named Carroll Shelby.
Carroll Shelby. Now he was a driver for, he's a sports car driver.
Yes.
Back in the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think most people, I'm guessing here, but maybe it's just because of what we do, but kind of a household name. I think you know who we're talking about if we talk about Carroll Shelby.
Yeah, if you're into racing, you know about Carroll
Shelby. Now, the guy's old. He's probably 88 years old at this point. I believe he's 88. So he's my grandfather's age, but he is still, you know, he still makes appearances at auctions. He still, you know, is still involved heavily in motor racing, motorsports, you know, just he's really hands on with the whole thing.
Now, and Carroll Shelby, of course, at this age is not racing anymore. And funny story, he stopped racing earlier than you would probably assume.
Yeah, no kidding. Now I'll tell you this, and most people may not know this. He actually won Le Mans in 1959 driving for Aston Martin. And he was also a Ferrari driver. So, you know, prior to that. So, and one other thing, he was a chicken farmer. He was a sometimes chicken farmer from what I heard. So, you know, that's the kind of thing, like, you know, the race car drivers, it wasn't like what it is now.
Right.
And when you were a race car driver, you raced when the races were happening.
Mm-hmm.
You probably didn't make a ton of money. I bet you made a fair amount of money.
Yeah, but
it's not
like
now.
You didn't make as much as racers make now.
No, you're not signing $1 million contracts or hundreds of $1 million contracts for, you know, 5 years or whatever.
With huge corporate sponsors.
No, exactly.
Stuff, yeah.
This was back in the day when you had to have another job and race on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was doing. He was an occasional chicken farmer. He raced for Ferrari. He raced for Aston Martin. He was a driver.
Yes.
And what unfortunately happened was he had a heart condition.
Yes. And when this heart condition, ended his track career, which it did, Shelby rolled with the punches, man. And he did something that I really respect when he said, okay, a lot of people in this situation where you are doing something that is of such an elite position, you know, even at that time, it takes a certain type of person to be a driver.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hundreds of thousands who want to do this and can't. So a lot of people, if they're told they can no longer pursue this kind of career, get mopey, get down in the dumps, you know, and, Not Mr. Shelby. Instead, he said, you know what? If I can't drive, the world's best race cars, then I am going to build the best one.
Yeah. Isn't this awesome? This is a good story because what happened was, you know, this is early on. This is like 1962, I believe, or 1961, when he got word that, AC cars. Have you ever heard of AC cars in England? Now, this is the whole tie between AC cars and the Shelby Cobra.
And Ford as well.
What eventually became the Shelby Cobra. AC cars was going to lose its engine provider. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, they were being powered by 6-cylinder engines, when it was an AC car. Well, Shelby talked to them and decided, you know, that's a great start for my race car.
Yes.
What I'll do is I'll take a great big American V8 engine. I'm going to stuff it inside there, the biggest one I can find.
Yeah, and that would be a 260 V8.
Exactly. He got a small block because Ford had a brand new small block. Mm-hmm. And it came from the 1962 Fairlane. And it was, again, 260 cubic inch engine. So it didn't start out as the, you know, the 289 or the 427 or whatever.
Right.
It started out as a 260. So the very first Shelby cars, which were actually AC bodies, mm-hmm. had these Ford mm-hmm. engines in them that were 260 cubic inches. And that was what you call, I guess, the Mark I cars. That
yeah.
was the very first.
First iteration.
Exactly. The AC Shelby Cobras.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a perfect marriage.
No, and this is 1962. That's
right.
The very beginning of it, right?
Yeah,
and
so let's give him a chance.
Early right? on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't exactly right, like you said, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't feel that it was exactly what it could be.
Yeah, there were most specifically the AC suspension and the power of the Cobra mm-hmm. with this engine. The suspension just wasn't built for that.
Yeah, and he gave it one more shot. He built a 289 cubic inch version of this in 1963, which is the Mark II.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had more power. It was a stronger car. But again, a lot of torque, mm-hmm. a lot of horsepower. And like you mentioned, this chassis, it had these longitudinal springs on the front, you know, leaf springs.
Yeah,
for the chassis. It was just set up for a lighter weight engine, not quite as much power as these big V8s were putting out.
Right.
So it was going to twist the frame. It was just not a good match.
Yeah.
So something had to happen. So by 1965, and this is a couple years later, you know, mm-hmm. going through the 289 version, which was, you know, again, very popular, very strong car.
Yeah. And by this point, he's built a little less than 700 of these.
Oh, really? Okay. So there's that many out there.
650. Well, these are the small block ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay. By 1965, this is basically when he ended the use of the Ace chassis. Okay, so and produced a custom made chassis, I guess, that was based on that chassis. Mm-hmm. Now it's still a tube frame, was spaced out a little more, but it went to a more modern suspension setup mm-hmm. and something that could handle the power that this thing was putting down. And because he also had a master plan for what he was going to do in 1965. And this is where we get into the car that we're talking about today, really. The big 427.
Yes, the 427. And, this vehicle, this actually I would call a piece of art is, it's a little more expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's way meaner.
Yeah, way meaner. Now there's a couple of versions of this thing too. And
yes.
this is what's confusing to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this. There were two versions that were still called the 427 that had two different engines.
Can you see how I'm biting my lip, man?
Yeah, if you want to hit us with it, go ahead. But it's a very minor difference, but it's a big difference, right?
Yeah, do the normal one first. Don't do the awesome one yet.
Okay, so most of these cars that were produced as a 427, they're mm-hmm. called the Cobra 427, had a 428 cubic inch engine.
Mm-hmm.
And that may surprise a lot of people. I mean, why would they call it a 427? It's a 428. But, you know, close enough, that type of thing. But that's not true because the 427 was a racing engine.
Yes.
And the 428 was designed for the Ford Galaxy and the Ford Thunderbird, which are big passenger cars.
Right.
And
yeah.
These were not detuned, but they weren't as tunable as a race car engine would be. And these aren't like the high output engines that you would think. Now, 428 mm-hmm. is not, and this is really strange, but the 428, mm-hmm. just the way it was built, that specific engine, you know, that specific engine combination was not nearly as strong as the true 427 that was built by Ford.
All right. Now, the Shelby Cobra 427, the one we're talking about now, mm-hmm. is also, got a couple interesting things about it when you talk in terms of street legality.
Yeah, that's true because a lot of them, as it turns out, in 1965, now that's the first year of the 427, okay, 65.
Right.
Most of these cars were actually street versions of the 427, which would be, in reality, the 428 engine.
Yes.
Okay, so detuned a little bit, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, there were some that were called semi-competition cars. So these are the ones that are labeled SC, and you probably mm-hmm. a lot of people have heard of SC, you know, the Cobra 427 SC.
Right, but that's, maybe aren't exactly sure why.
Exactly, that's semi competition, mm-hmm. and those are detuned engines as well, and they've got bumpers on them, things like that, so that they can be driven on the street. But they're also, you know, they're not quite race car. Mm-hmm. Now there were very few full competition 427s that were built, and mm-hmm. I mean very, very few full competition 427s.
Like,
and
there's only one left.
No. There's more than that. Yeah. There's more 427. There are very few. I mean, we're talking like in the, you know, a dozen range or something like that, maybe less at this point. I don't know. I've seen a few online, but there are very, very few full competition mm-hmm. 427 Cobras around. And, you know, they had a unique suspension. They had, they had a 42-gallon fuel cell in the back end.
Which is surprising.
It's huge. Yeah. A 42-gallon fuel tank in the back end of that car.
And you think about the weight that
has. Well, that's the thing, though. It balanced out the engine weight. So when it was fully loaded, it was like a 50-50 balance, and it was really great.
Oh, okay. Then that makes sense. That's necessary, because we should also talk about the fact, or at least point out the fact, that the power-to-weight ratio of the Shelby Cobra mm-hmm. In all the iterations is impressive.
Yeah, very, very impressive. It doesn't matter if it's a 428 or what it was.
Right.
I mean, any of them were impressive, because these cars are so lightweight and they're so small, mm-hmm. Combined with this big block engine that they put in, or even the small block, you know, the old 289s, those are still extremely strong cars. But when you bump it up to the true 427.
Oh, buddy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's ridiculously fast. One quick thing before you get into your,
What's that?
Letting the cat out of the bag as you want to.
Yes.
One real quick thing. I knew a guy that worked on the Ford racing teams for a while.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I sure did.
Really?
And you know what? The weird thing is I mentioned this guy in a couple podcasts ago when I mentioned, I took my car to like a little garage in downtown Detroit that I had a Honda CRX that I had really hopped up. I mean, new engine, new everything, right?
Nice.
A lot of internal parts that were done. His dad, the guy that ran that shop, was a welder there. His dad worked on the Ford teams with Carroll Shelby in the racing series in that time frame, the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And the even crazier part is I only knew that because I mentioned a project that I was doing at work with a guy that was one of the original Ram Chargers,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Dodge employee racer team. The guy that I knew, his name was Dick Burke, and he was one of the original Ram Chargers. He was an engineer. And they still call them back to do these special events at the museum and things.
Nice.
There's very few of them. There's probably 10 of them left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then there were later series of them. But he was one of the original racers from back in the early 60s.
One of the founding Chargers.
Exactly, one of the founding Ram Chargers. And these two guys knew each other, because I mentioned that I was doing a project with Dick Burke, and he said, I know Dick Burke.
That's
weird. And he said, tell him, Miles says hello. And, you know, it was just this weird back and forth, but a strange chance coincidence thing that happened. Ooh. And, you know, this is before Facebook and all that, so there's no way to, like, connect them. So I'm taking messages back and forth between the two of them.
Yes.
Really weird. But anyways, a couple of old-timers that were into some really cool cars at the time. So, Ben, you got the story about something unique.
Oh, yes. It's killing me.
What is it?
I'm sorry. Thank you so much for putting up with me. You guys who are listening in, you can't see it, but I'm like jittering back and forth and moving around.
He's
uncomfortably.
Anxious.
I'm anxious. I'm excited. Let me ask you, Scott, something that I suspect you already know the answer to. Let's play Jeopardy. On January 21st, 2007, this vehicle fetched a $5.5 million price at the Barrett Jackson car auction. Now, this was a world record price for a U.S. car.
World record price. What kind of vehicle would that be?
I don't know.
I'm going to guess it was a Cobra 427.
You're right. Could you be more specific?
No, I'm sorry, I can't, Ben.
Okay. Well, luckily Watson is not playing this game with us,
yeah.
The IBM computer. But that is the Shelby Cobra 427 Super Snake.
Super Snake.
This Shelby Cobra 227 Super Snake.
427.
Oh, 427. Yeah, 227.
Yep.
Where am I going?
1966.
Yes. It's made in 1966, and it did indeed sell for $5.5 million. It's a 800 horsepower sports car.
Wait, 800 horsepower.
Yes.
That bears some explanation here. 800 horsepower in a car that is as small as the Cobra?
Right.
That's unbelievable.
That's what a lot of people, are talking about, because it's got, now this vehicle itself weighs like maybe 2,500 pounds.
At most. I would be surprised if it weighs that much, but I think most of that would be engine.
Yes, yes. A lot of it is engine. Mm-hmm. Engine so much so that some people got, uncomfortable with it. So it's got, this horsepower comes from a twin supercharged overhead valve V8. In 3.2 seconds, this thing goes from 0 miles per hour to 60.
This is 1966.
Yes.
This is unbelievable. This is the numbers of a current supercar. Mm-hmm. This is the numbers of, this is in the Ferrari range. This is in the Lamborghini range,
sure.
the Lotus range.
Yeah.
This isn't an old muscle car range. The muscle cars were fast, but they weren't that fast.
To quote Mr. Shelby himself, "When I built this dual supercharged 427 Cobra in 1966, I wanted it to be the fastest, meanest car on the road. 40 years later, it will still kick the tail of just about anything in the world. It's the fastest street legal Cobra I've ever owned."
Wow.
And that's from the man himself.
So this was his personal car, right?
Yes. And there were only like two produced.
Two produced. Okay. So, okay. That bears the question then. Where was the second car?
Okay. For a little while, the second car was the property of a prominent entertainer that you may know of as Bill Cosby.
Ah, yes. Dr. Huxtable.
Dr. Huxtable himself. Well, the good doctor did take the car out for a test drive one day.
He bought it though, right?
He bought it.
He did buy it.
Uh-huh. And he took it out on the test drive. And now this is the story. This is how the story goes. Bill Cosby was so frightened by this test drive and so uncomfortable with just the sheer I hate to use this word again, but the sheer brutal force of this thing, mm-hmm. that he took it back, right?
He was really done with it. Well, so he bought the car and he said it's too much? Not price-wise, just too much power.
Yes, just too much power. And let's follow this car a little bit. Another quotation here from Harley Cluxton, a collector who owned the Super Snake that was sold at the auction.
This is Carroll Shelby's car.
This is Carroll Shelby's car. Yeah, which is part of the reason it sold for so much.
Yeah.
So Cluxton says that this car speaks volumes about the genius in Carroll Shelby. To quote Cluxton, "Shelby's Cobra is the benchmark that defines the American muscle car. His baby does it all, and without the help of ASR, ESP, ABS, engine management ECUs, carbon fiber, titanium, or the United Nations."
In other words, United Nations.
He throws that in there.
He threw the UN in there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny because this is just a flat-out fast car, no doubt about it. No electronics going on. No
bells and whistles.
Exactly. No safety features, nothing. I mean, other than, you know, roll bar possibly and things like that.
Right.
Now, what's interesting, that the car that – you said that Bill Cosby bought the car, took it out for one drive, brought it back, said, I can't drive this too fast. And that was inspiration for one of his albums, wasn't it? Or one of his bits, at least, anyways, one of his comedy bits.
It was. Well,
200 miles per hour, I think is the name of it, is what they mentioned in the article here.
Yes, yes.
I've been searching for bits of that to listen to it, and I can't find it. I'll have to really dig deep on that one. But the tragic part about that story is that car, the one that Cosby owned, mm-hmm. was later sold. Because remember, there's only two. There's
right.
Carroll Shelby's car. There's the one that Bill Cosby owned. Brought it back. It was sold to someone else. And unfortunately, that person crashed it and died.
Yes.
So right now, there's only the one left. And that's why it fetched. And not only that, it was owned by Carroll Shelby. So
yeah, it's unique and it has history.
That's why it fetched that $5.5 million. Mm. Now, that's an American car, world record at this point, I think.
Yes.
I don't know if anything's topped it by now. I doubt it.
Yeah, the funny thing with records of that nature, records of auctions and things like that, is that the most expensive – they have a high turnover. Mm-hmm. You know, the most expensive car 1 year has a high chance of not holding that record the next year.
True. Very
and
true.
And it's kind of like
– Even the next auction.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you see other statistics like that. The one I can think of the most easily is top land speed record.
Yeah, true. True. And always falls.
It seems like every year we need to.
Yeah, that record always falls. So, yeah. Anyways, if I don't know if I have much more to add to this other than that there is a Shelby American Auto Club registry that you can check out if you want to. Now, there's a ton of, as we mentioned earlier, replicas on the street. And
oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways, now people have said that the replicas are better than the originals because remember the originals, we talked about the suspension problems and just, right. it wasn't really matched quite as well as it could have been originally. Mm-hmm. Carroll Shelby helped to refine that in the 427 and then, later in the Super Snake version that he made. But, the thing about this is that, originally it was just kind of and I hate to say it, but it was kind of thrown together at first. And
I could see that.
Not sloppily, really, but yeah, it was quickly thrown together.
I don't think you're wrong.
And of course, now, going back 40 years, 45 years, it's easier to manufacture something that handles much better, that maybe has the ability to transfer that power easier to the wheel. There's different ways to make horsepower, or maybe more efficient ways to make horsepower in this case. So yeah, you can find some kit cars now that have 800 plus horsepower. You can find some that have more than that, at the drag strips, the Cobras, but they won't have the history that the Super Snake does have.
Yeah.
So you can find replicas of all different values and horsepower and quality, but the originals are definitely something to behold.
And just in case you're wondering, for all the multimillionaires listening to the show right now, just in case you're wondering, I did a little bit of cursory investigation, just a bit, just touched the tip of the iceberg, if you will, and it appears that this vehicle is currently not for sale.
Not for sale.
So please put away your checkbooks.
Yeah. If you're just about ready to write $6 million on the line, not necessary.
Right. Now, as you have pointed out, Scott, people can find imitations. They can find kit cars.
Mm-hmm. You can still find originals at auctions.
Yes.
It's rare. But I watched about 15 years ago, I saw a guy in a bidding battle in one of these. It was one of these high-end auctions that I stumbled across. The same one where they sold that, the Green Hornets car.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Black
yeah.
Beauty.
Yeah.
It was one of those, ridiculous auctions where lots of money is changing place. I was just a witness to it, watching. Stumbled across it.
One of those auctions where if you and I were sitting there to cover it, we would both sit absolutely still.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even blinking my eyes.
No matter how much my nose itches.
I don't want to signal anything by accident.
Yeah.
So, I was watching and there was a very – at the time, I was in high school, probably 18 – I guess it was 17 or 18. I watched a guy was young. He had a family, a wife and daughter. It was a young doctor from the area. He was bidding like $425,000 for an original AC Cobra.
Wow.
And the sale never went through. They went to the side and continued dealing, so no one ever knew what really happened with it.
Okay.
But I was just blown away by the price on that thing. And that was a good 15 years ago. But it was an all-original and very, very valuable.
And speaking of all-original cars, we've got a little bit of listener mail. It's very brief.
Sure.
All right, Mr. Benjamin, Casey writes in to tell us in response to our recent podcast on the Aston Martin Signet, if you'll recall. And Casey is a fellow of few words, and I think some of them are hilarious, just the brevity of this. Check it out. Dear Car Stuff, Signet is a black sheep, a car that does not belong in the lineup. And he goes on to say, other black sheep cars include the Cimarron and the Borrego and more. And then he says, you know what? You could do a podcast on black sheep cars.
Okay.
So
a black sheep. That's what he called the Signet, huh?
Yeah. And does not mince words there. Cause I think we did.
But Signet means swan, Ben. It's a black swan.
It's an ugly duckling.
It's the black swan.
It's the black swan.
Yeah.
Whoa, dude. That was pretty good.
Wow. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And
Oh, what? No, I was just going, bah. not worth really going back for.
All right.
Black sheep cars. That's a good one.
That is.
And I agree with the Cimarron.
Yeah, the Signet, it's funny because for people who haven't heard that episode, Scott, you and I tried to be kind of fair and balanced, I guess, about it.
Like, sure.
We want to be objective about the circumstances surrounding that car, but what Casey definitely has his finger on the pulse here because – that is a response that is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Yeah, it's probably more common than we think.
And we are going to go ahead and wrap this up, as always. Thanks so much for listening. It's the best part of our day to do these kind of shows, right?
Correct.
And we don't want it to stop here at the podcast. We'd love to hear what you think about either the Cobra, the Signet, a specific model of car you'd like us to cover, or really anything. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We've got a blog. We've got a website you may have heard of. And guess what? We have an email address. That is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.